So today's class, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 20, Text 28 through
33. 33 is on the board.
33 is on the board. Very good. Sa samra loka halakyam aishvaryam adhirat sriyam chakram chaskhalitam pranam mrishit Upararam Ha Samrad Loka Palakyam Aishwaram Adirat Sriyam Chakram chas kalitam prana.
Chakram chas kalitam prana.
Risite uparam hi uparamha.
Risite uparamaha.
Risite upararamaha.
Risite uparamaha.
Sa samrad loka palakyam.
Sa samrad loka palakyam.
Aishwaram Adirat Sriyam
Aishwaryam Adirat Sriyam
Chakram Chas Kalitam Prana
Chakram Chas Kalitam Prana
Mrisheti Uparam Maha
Mrisheti Uparam Maha
Sa Samrad Loka Palakyam
Sa Samrad Loka Palakyam
Aishwaram Adirat Sriyam
Aishwaryam Adirat Sriyam
Chakram chas kalitam pranam.
Chakram chas kalitam pranam.
Mrisati upararama.
Mrisati upararama. Sa samrad loka palakyam.
Sa samrad
loka palakyam.
Aishwaryam adirat sriyam.
Aishwaryam adirat sriyam.
Chakram chas kilatam pranam.
Chakram chas kalitam pranam.
Rishetyu Pararamaha Sasamrad Loka Palakyam
Aishwaram Adirat Sriyam
Aishwaryam Adirat Sriyam
Chakram Chaskalitam Pranam
Rishetyu Pararamaha
Sasamrad Loka
Palakyam
Aishwaryam Adirat Sriyam
Aishwaryam Adirat Sriyam
Chakram Chaskalitam Pranam
Chakram Chaskalitam Pranam
Rishyati Upararamaha
Rishyati Upararamaha Sa samrad loka palakyam Aishwaryam adirat sriyam Chakram chaskalitam pranam Mrisheti upararamaha
All right, so I'm going to chant 28 and 29 like that. Mrigan chuka dutta krishnan hiranyena parivartan adat karmani mansnare niyutani chaturdasa. Translation. When Maharaj Bhart performed the sacrifice known as Manshnara, or a sacrifice in the place known as Manshnara, He gave in charity 14 locks of excellent elephants with white tusks and black bodies, completely covered with golden ornaments. That's 14,000 elephants.
1,400,000.
1,400,000.
Yeah,
that's
14
right.
Lakhs. Yeah,
1,400,000.
Yeah.
Krishna. 14 locks of excellent elephants with white tusks, black bodies, completely covered with golden ornaments. Not just decorated, completely covered. You know. Bharata Shamahat Karma Na Purve Na Pare Nripaha Naiva Pur Naiva Pratsyanti Bahu Bayam Tridivam Yataha. Translation: as one cannot approach the heavenly planets simply by strength of his arms, for who can touch the heavenly planets with his hands? One cannot imitate the wonderful activities of Maharaj Bharat. No one could perform such activities in the past, nor will anyone be able to do so in the future. Text 30. Kirata Hunanyavanan Pandaran Kankan Kashan Chakan Abrahmanya Nipam Shahan Lechan Dig Vidye Kilan. Translation: when Maharaj Bharat was on tour, he defeated or killed the Kiratas, Hunas, Yavanas, Pandaras, Kankas, Kasas, Shakas, and the kings who were opposed to the Vedic principles of Brahminical culture. These were the Malechans. This Malecha, the Malechan, that word is translated here, such atheists who had no respect for Vedic civilization. A few of those guys around these days, what do you say? So they were killed, either defeated or killed. Text 31. Jitva purusara devan ye raso kamsi bejure devastriya rasam nitaha pranibi punar aharat. Translation: formerly, after conquering the demigods, all the demons had taken shelter in the lower planetary system known as Rasatala, and had brought all the wives and daughters of the demigods there also. Maharaj Bharat, however, rescued all those women, along with their associates, from the clutches of the demons, and he returned them to the demigods. Such heroic feats, you know. We think we have it bad now. You know, the demons were pretty heavy in this time. They're heavy now, but they were heavy then. Text 32. Shravam kamandu du hatahu prajanam tasya rodasi samastri navasahasrir dikshu chakram avartayat. Translation: Maharaj Bharat provided all necessities for his subjects, both on this earth and in the heavenly planets, for 27,000 years. He circulated his soldiers and distributed his soldiers in all directions. He circulated his orders and distributed his soldiers in all directions. And again, today's verse. Sa samrad loka palakyam aishvaram adiratsviyam chakram chaksa chakalitam pranam rishiti uparara maha. Translation. Oh, we should do the word for word, huh?
Sa-hi.
Maharaj Bharat. Samrat.
Samrat.
The emperor.
Lokapalakyam.
Known as the ruler of all the lokas.
Known as the ruler of all the lokas.
What is a loka?
Planet.
Good. Aishwaryam.
Aishwaryam.
Such opulence.
Such opulence.
Adirat.
Adirat.
Thoroughly in power.
Sriyam.
Sriyam. Kingdom.
Kingdom.
Chakram.
Chakram.
Soldiers or orders.
Soldiers or orders.
Cha.
Cha.
And. Ashkalitam.
Ashkalitam.
Without failure.
Without failure.
Pranam.
Pranam.
Life or sons and family. Nrisha,
Mrisha,
all false.
All false.
Iti,
Iti,
thus.
Thus.
Upararama,
Upararama,
ceased to enjoy.
Ha,
in the past.
In the past.
Translation. As the ruler of the entire universe, Emperor Bharat had the opulences of a great kingdom and unconquerable soldiers. His sons and family had seemed to him to be his entire life. But finally, he thought of all this as an impediment to spiritual advancement, and therefore he ceased to enjoy it. So I say, and you can repeat, as the ruler of the entire universe,
as the ruler of the entire universe,
Emperor Bharat,
Emperor Bharat,
had the opulences of a great kingdom,
and
unconquerable soldiers.
His sons and family
had seemed to him to be his entire life.
But finally,
he thought of all this
as an impediment
to spiritual advancement,
and therefore
he ceased
from enjoying it.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Yes. Maharaj Bharat had incomparable opulence in sovereignty, soldiers, sons, daughters, and everything for material enjoyment. But when he realized that all such material opulences were useless for spiritual advancement, he retired from material enjoyment. The Vedic civilization enjoins that after a certain age, following in the footsteps of Maharaj Bharat, one should cease to enjoy material opulences and should take the order of Vanaprast. Once again, today's verse. As the ruler of the entire universe, Emperor Bharat had the opulences of a great kingdom and unconquerable soldiers. His sons and family had seemed to him to be his entire life. But finally, he thought of all this as an impediment to spiritual advancement, and therefore he ceased from enjoying it. Om Gyanatamarindasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Swapadantikam Bancha Kalpatarubyas Chakripa Sindhubhivacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So, we can see, as is outlined here, it's kind of building up to this verse. We're hearing 1,400,000 elephants completely covered with gold. You know, first class elephants. All the fire sacrifices that he did up and down the banks of the Jamuna, all in, up and down the banks of the Ganga, all the way from the beginning to the mouth of the river. So much he did. Such an army that he had. He was able, with this army, to conquer the demons, free the mothers and daughters, the wives and daughters of the demigods that had been captured and enslaved. You see, he was a great hero. He was known all over the planet. He did fabulous things. Things, you could say, things were really happening his way. You know, he was having a good life. A very great opulence. He couldn't compare it with anybody. So he had fame, he had profit, adoration, distinction, he had it all, you see. Through intelligence, though, because his mindset was not to perform all this activity just so he could try to taste and enjoy it. He was trying, he was performing all these wonderful horse sacrifices for the satisfaction of Krishna. You see? So his desire was to serve Krishna. It wasn't to, yes, Prabhu?
Well, I just wonder if you could talk about those horse sacrifices. I mean, I think it's been talked about before that they don't really hurt the horses, but it seems like you're hurting the horses when you sacrifice
them. I'm not that familiar with the Ashwamedha sacrifices. Mother, do you know much about them?
No, only that I thought it was, you know, the old horse is given a new life. And, you know, whatever sacrifice, they're also testing the prowess. And it's, you know, if that result is good, then all the results are good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rejuvenated, less young body.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't mind that. Rejuvenated, less young body. How does that sound, James?
I'd take that in a heartbeat. Wow. Although I hate to go through my 20s again.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could be a devotee, maybe. If we could, you know, I certainly wouldn't want to be a teenager ever again. I don't know, maybe it's better to be an old man and die. But yeah, that's about what I know about it, you know. The rejuvenation of the horse is sacrificed. My understanding is the horse is let's say the word, killed, you know, but sacrificed in the sacrifice. But it's a very opulent ceremony. It's very expensive. And I don't know all the details, but there's a, it's lots of grandeur. It's a big thing. Huge fire. You need lots of gold. I know that. It takes a lot of gold. Barrels of ghee, you know, it takes. So that's about all I know about it, though. You know, sorry. But, you know, he performed these Rastayuja sacrifices, the Jagyas for the satisfaction of Krishna. Through all this, and through having a successful life, he suddenly started to see all this as an impediment to my spiritual advancement. He's thinking, you know, now I've got the best army in the world. That's great. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's bad, because now I have to spend so much time managing it. You know? Well, I've got all this opulence. That's good. Well, no, that's bad, because I have to protect all this opulence and, you know, I have to guard it or else, you know, I have this great kingdom and that's good. Well, that's bad, because, you know, I have to protect that, because someone may think, if they see that I'm weak, a weak ruler, they may get their army together and come and conquer me, you see. So he started seeing the negative side of the accumulation of material opulence. And included in the material opulence was sons and daughters, family, material opulence. You see? And he could see that these things are a challenge to maintaining my spiritual life. So he decided, I will cease to enjoy this. You know? Meaning, ceasing to enjoy, it's not, we don't give up things artificially. You know, it's just like if I want to do some nonsense, you know, if I have a strong desire to do intoxication, you know, if I've always had this fun thing that I like to drink whiskey, you know, something like that, and then I decided, well, I'm going to give it up, so I quit doing it. But every day I think, boy, what a nice glass of whiskey would be great right now, you know. This is usually the time, you know, for all those years, right now, at this time of day, I would have three fingers of whiskey, you know. And it was all, oh, it was my favorite brand, too. Yeah, that, you know, that black label stuff, you know. Oh, I can just taste it. Yeah, those were the days. But I gave that up, you know. I don't do that anymore. sure would be great, though, right? Yeah. Anyway, you see what I mean? So in other words, it's still there in the mind. You know, the mind is still doing it. The tongue is still thinking, I can taste it. The nose is saying, oh, I can still smell that wonderful aroma. You know? So you're still partaking. It's just that you've really haven't given up the most important thing, and that's the desire. You see? You haven't renounced it. You're still massaging it in your mind. You see? So by ceasing to enjoy it, he ceased to desire. He doesn't want to try to enjoy, to derive enjoyment any longer from anything material. Well, why? Because he thought, wow, this is getting in the way of my spiritual advancement. Now, what an incredibly advanced position for someone to take, especially the most opulent person on the planet. You know? He's the king. He's got all this incredible opulence, fame, wealth. You know, he's adored. I mean, even the demigods adored him because he saved their wives and their daughters. You see? He's a hero. He's got everything. And out of all that, he's able to see this is an impediment to my spiritual life. Well, that's true intelligence. That's renunciation. You see? Well, so that's why Prabhupada says, Maharaj Bharat, that we should follow his example. Follow his example. You see? Why his example? Because he had so much to give up. He had so much to abandon. It wasn't like he had two pennies to rub together, you know, and that's it. And he didn't have anything, and he decided, oh, I think I'll take vanaprast. No, he had this opulent family, kingdom, gold, you name it. He had whatever was available. Incredible fame worldwide. So it's a very difficult thing if he was attached to all this material. It would be very difficult for him to give it up and take vanaprast, you see. But he decided out of intelligence, no, I have had it. Why? It's not that, well, I don't like being king. Doesn't say anything that he didn't like it. He obviously liked what he did because he did it so expertly. You see? His orders were circulated properly. The soldiers were sent in all directions. He rises to the occasion of saving the families of the demigods, saving the planet, saving the world, even over and above this planet. He's even saving the inhabitants of heavenly planets, you see, going down to the hellish planets to rescue, you see. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm just sick and tired. No, things were working for him. And at the height of this, he said, this is not helping my spiritual life. So this is great intelligence. I want to advance spiritually. And I'm prepared to do whatever is necessary to do that. And I can see through my intelligence that my pursuit of material opulence is in my way. And this is coming from somebody who has it all. You see. So we stress this point of someone like Maharaj Bharat taking vanaprast. If he can do it, surely we can. You see. I mean, how can we whine and say, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't want to give up my 10-year-old car. You know, I don't know if I could ever walk away from my mortgage payment. I love that mortgage payment. It's just writing that check every month is just like, oh, it's like peace, sweetness to me, you see. So the devotee is trained from the persons like Maharaj Bharat, from the examples of people like this, were trained to not just to renounce, but to be on guard for our spiritual life. You see, I want to give up whatever may be an impediment for my spiritual life. You see? We're serious about that. Now, that means everything that's an impediment. Because I don't want to keep something that's an impediment, but I'm, over, you know, one hand, I'm keeping something that kind of trips me up, causes me difficulty. It's like dragging a weight. I'm trying to run a race, but I'm dragging this big, heavy weight. You see? So if you're dragging this big ball or big rock, you can't be serious about winning the race when you can just let it go, you see. So anything that slows us down on our path of advancement towards Krishna consciousness, towards Krishna praying, you see, if we're sincere, we'll let go. The more we become sincere about achieving our goal of loving Krishna, you see, becoming a lover of Krishna, the more we are sincere about that, the less attacks will be to anything that could in any way, shape, or form trip us up, slow us down, impede us in any way. You see? So, and I'm going in detail to illustrate this. So, if we all agree on that, that means anything. That means false ego as well. Which is generally our biggest problem, isn't it? My false ego. Because I think that I should be, I think, you know, I just don't think I get the proper respect. You know? I don't think you guys are appreciating me. You know? You're standing in my way. Because you're, you know, I hear you talk behind my back. You know, you tell her, and then she tells other people. And I don't get the proper respect. You see? False ego. Because I heard someone maybe chastise me or said, boy, you know, this guy doesn't do this right, or he doesn't do that, you know, so that kind of stuck my false ego right here. And now I know there's a conspiracy out there, you see. So I'm calling my friend, and I was talking to my friend at the other temple, and they were saying, you know, the leaders there, they're not like that. They're really sweet and wonderful. They would never go behind your back and talk, say something, I'm going to move there, you know. You see how the mind works like that? Now, what do we have in a situation like that that I've outlined? False ego. We've taken a snapshot of a temporary emotion from me and my, let's say I have this friend who's saying, oh, well, gee whiz, you know, don't let them treat you like that. You come on over here. You see? They're dealing with a snapshot of a temporary emotion because maybe a month ago or a month from now, this devotee is going to be complaining about the management there, you see. And maybe a month ago or a month from now, you'll be praising the management here. But I let my false ego get me all emotional, and I made a decision based on an emotional reaction. In other words, I'm really an illusion. I'm not dealing with reality, you see. And where did it come from? Maybe I didn't like the way I was corrected. You know, maybe I didn't think I should ever be corrected. Now, all right, now let's say that the person who corrected me did it in a harsh way. Okay? Let's say that. You know, I needed to be a little correction. You know, I'm not perfect. I goof up. You know, I make a lot of mistakes. You know, I know most of you don't, but I do.
I don't either.
So, yeah. So it's really good. It's kind. I've got some friends in the movement that I can go to. You know, most of them are sannyasis, and I ask them advice because I know they're going to give me the blunt, brutal truth. In a sweet way. But if I say, you know what, I was thinking this devotee said that, and I thought this, they're going to say, that sometimes they may say, well, you're in complete maya. You're completely wrong. You know, with a smile. Now, I've had leaders, I'm not going to mention any names, but I've had leaders say that same thing without the smile. And real heavy. I mean, my secret was blowing in the You know? You see? So I've had, you know, the easy handling and the heavy. You know, sometimes you're just wrong. Not only that, you're wrong, but you're in the wrong mood about being, you know, I'm mistreated. So sometimes a true friend who loves you, you see, key word here, the operative word is love. When you have a loving exchange with somebody, then if it's true, you know, it's a true relationship, then that friend can say, you know, oh, Prabhu, I think you're in Maya. I think you should reconsider this. And if you start to whine, they may say, come on, get over yourself. You see? That takes somebody close to be able to do that. You see? Because of our false ego. We should be able to take that from anybody. You know, we should be able to take correction. Why? I want to advance. You know, I want to know. You know, God forbid that I should be doing the wrong thing and everybody's saying, oh, yes, that's really good, Prabhu. And then behind my back, they're saying, did you see that? Do you see what? That's terrible. See? What a nut. You see how he does it? You see? Kindness and love means that I want to help you. You see? So, and we were talking last night about when we approach someone, and sometimes we need to do that. You just can't leave it up to the temple president or the management of the temple. Sometimes we, in love, may help one another, you see, because we care. I just demonstrated that the opposite of caring and loving you is to not say something when you're wrong, you see. And I have people get angry at me sometimes. You know, it's just like... I won't even mention the temple. There's one temple that I go to, and there's this one devotee. Maybe been a devotee 7 or 8 years, and he's very. He has a habit of coming to the temple. He lives outside this community. He does deity service. You see, so he drives from a town maybe 20 miles away, brings his new, freshly up laundered clean cloth to go on the altar, you know, to do the offering in an arti. And comes down to the Brahmachari ashram, takes a shower, and then gets dressed, and then comes into the bathroom to put on his tilak and to check out his cloth. So I was in there one time, and I said, well, you know, Prabhu, you're not supposed, first of all, you shouldn't put your tilak on in the bathroom. You know, you shouldn't even take your tilak in the bathroom. You know, it's sacred, you know. And secondly, you can't really go on, technically, you can't go on the altar in that cloth now that you've come in here. Now, I said it nicely. I said it nicer than what I'm saying, you know, sweetened. And he became upset. Well, where did you hear that? You know. And, you know, I said, well, you know, I can't remember exactly. Well, the Archana Padati, first of all. And, you know, I was told by Vishnu John Maharaj, you know, in a very harsh way, that I was a total nonsense for putting on my tilak in the bathroom. And that was in 1974, I think, and I never forgot that. Trust me, he was not sweet when he told me. Call me nasty words. Just broke my little heart. See? But I mean, I learned, you know, right away. I thought, oh, wow, I guess I shouldn't do this again. So, but the reaction that I got was kind of like, you know, he told me that I should do the research and find out where that's written. And I said, no, you do the research and find out where it's written. Or if you prefer, continue as you are. But I was once head pujari here in this particular temple, and I'm telling you, the pujaris don't go into the stool room with cloth and then go onto the altar. You know, and it's in the Archana Padati. It's, you know, it's kind of like common knowledge, you know. So, it's common sense. It's common sense, you see. And, but Prabhupada did say, you know, the some devotee was going to get him some water. And in those days, we just used tap water. We didn't have bottled water, you know. So the devotee he went into the stool room and got him a glass of water. And Prabhupada said, no, that water's contaminated. And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada, it's the same water that comes out of the tap in the kitchen. And Prabhupada said, when it comes into that room, it's contaminated.
Different business
in the kitchen. Yeah. As soon as it comes out of that tap in there, it's contaminated. So you can't take water in the stool room and, you know, use it for tea. You shouldn't. I mean, you can, but you shouldn't. I hope nobody gets angry. You see. And sometimes I notice, you know, in this day and age, we can't. Gurpa Sad Maharaj, we were laughing about this, you know. It's not like, you know, when Vishnu John Maharaj told me that I shouldn't put on the tilak, you know, he started to scream at me. Nonsense! You fool! Idiot, what are you doing? You can't put your tilak on in the bathroom. Was, oh, excuse me, Maharaj, you know. Well, you know, I didn't go consult a lawyer and get together a case. Say I've been offended. You know, I was just told, I was, you know, by someone who was realized, and he told me. So, but sometimes in this day and age, as Kali Yuga progresses, we have to be very careful. You know how we say? We can't say, can't raise your voice and say, you know. I mean, even when something startles you, like, stop that, don't do that! You know? What? How dare you talk to me that way? You see? You know, it's like Ridhananda Maharaj was joking, he was saying that that the proper way is like you might say to someone, Prabhu, if you have time, and if it's okay with you, and if you're not too tired or stressed, and if it wouldn't bother you, and if it wouldn't offend you in any way, would you mind getting me a glass of water? You know, rather in the old days, the sannyasis would say, they'd be talking, you know, and give me a glass of water. You know. Or sometimes, you know, water. You know. Wasn't bad. I didn't feel like, oh, why are you treating me that? You know, why are you treating me like that? False ego just starts to go. So we have to renounce this. See, we have to give that up. We have to fight that because it's a huge impediment, you know. And it false ego oftentimes will manifest in a knee jerk. You see, a knee jerk reaction. It happens just like that, isn't it? Somebody says something, and boy, it hits a nerve. You see. So a good thing to do is to train ourselves. I learned a long time ago, Tamal Krishna Goswami. He taught me, spent a lot of time teaching me to, he said, remember, don't ever forget that the best reaction almost all the time is don't react. Don't react. You see? Don't let yourself say, what? You know? How dare you say that? Don't react. Process it. You know? If someone says something that may be a correction, first of all, assume, you know, you're probably right. More than likely, you're right. I'm sure you're right, you see. And so I need to heed what you're saying. You know, I'm not going to get all upset and think, well, how dare you point out that I have a fault. I'm going to thank you for telling me that I can do this a better way. Now, I'm not saying I won't disagree. You know, I may say, well, that doesn't make any sense, what you said. But it's not because of my ego. I mean, you're saying that I should do something a different way, and I'm saying, oh, well, can you explain that? Tell me. Sell me on the idea. And then if you make sense, and I say, oh, I get it, I understand. Now I walk away educated. Now I walk away doing the thing better. You see. So it's just in the way that we as devotees interface with one another, you see. And now if someone maybe gets a little gruff, you know, which is not proper, I admit it's not proper for someone to say, you know, nonsense, don't do that, you see. But if it's correct, it's correct. You know? You see what I mean? If it's right, if it's a, who am I to say, well, I you know, I don't think I liked your tone. You know? Before that knee-jerk reaction of being offended comes forward, you know, grab it. You know, get to the gist of what we're talking about. You're saying that I shouldn't put the T-lock on the bathroom. Boy, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we're rolling. Now I'm educated. Now we're rolling on to the next point. You see? And it doesn't matter so much. Why should it matter to me if you were tactful the way you told me? You see? That should matter to you. I should walk away feeling, well, I learned something. And maybe you'll walk away thinking, you know, I wasn't very tactful in the way I said that. I should have said that nicer. You see? Does this make any sense? You know, false ego is something that you better agree. False ego is one of those things that we have to really work on because it haunts us. You know? It trips us up. And it could set us back years in our advancement because false ego was something that we rarely, when we have it, we rarely don't know. I mean, we rarely know that we have it. Usually we don't know that we have it, you see. It's like having a disease that goes undiscovered, or undiagnosed. It's hard. It's very difficult, you see, because I don't want to. It's very difficult to admit that I have faults and that I goof up and that I'm wrong, you see. So, but it's very nice once we start to make this progress and to get a little bit of a hold of the false ego. Don't let it react, you see. Don't let it react. Don't let somebody anger you, you know. No. How can we do that, you may wonder, you may ask. Well, first of all, we have to realize we're okay. We're eternal living entities who have fallen into this material world to try to enjoy separate from Krishna. We've come in contact with this wonderful ISKCON, and here we sit at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gaur Nitai and his servants. You know, they're servants. So things are really good for us. You know, the future looks so bright, we really need sunglasses. You know? Mm-hmm. Things are great. We're on the right track. I'm here. I'm associating with the devotees. I'm taking prasadam. I'm chanting, you see, going to the programs. I'm okay. So I can let down my need to be defensive. You see, in the material world, it's all for one, every man for himself, even though people tend to run with groups of friends. But basically, it's every man for himself. People are all trying to outdo one another. You know, I heard a couple of guys out at the park. I was telling Mother Sundamini, you know, last night, you know, I hear things like this all the time when I get out in the material world. But this one guy was saying, yeah, well, I can't remember the details. I just got this new cell phone. It's a new iPhone or number whatever, you know. And he wanted to show the guy what he had, you know. In other words, I'm saying, I got a better phone than you, buddy. Not in those words, though. And the other guy says, well, I looked at that particular one, but I decided to go with the iPhone number 4 because blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So in other words, you played a card and I trumped it. And this goes on and on and on, you know. You hear people talking, you know. Little Johnny got straight A's in this. Well, you know, my little Johnny, he got a trophy for soccer, you know. So it's like that. One-upsmanship. I want to show you that I'm better than you. At least in a couple of ways. So in other words, the false egos are on fire when you walk off these premises. They're on fire.
You see the bumper stickers on cars represent that, you know.
Oh.
My child's an honor student.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And different sayings, you know, like that.
And did you know they did some studies on this? People that have a bumper sticker, no matter what it says, are 15 times more likely to engage in road rage.
Oh, really?
False ego. No matter what it says. Yes, Mark?
I had to go, got called down for jury duty, and they were, you know, they select the jury, and so the question they asked was, what bumper sticker do you have on your car? Because, you know, it shows, you know, where people are at. And I wanted to get, of course, I didn't want to stay for jury duty. I wanted to get off jury duty, so I said, oh, I have Meat is murder.
You may go. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Meat is murder. Boy, she's weird. After she left, her probably you're that. Can you imagine what a wacko? I wonder if she thinks like that when she orders a Big Mac. Yeah, so the false egos are on fire, you know, when you walk out of here, when you get away from the devotees. We have false ego, but these are like little flickering flames, you know, like a teeny little candle. You know, these false egos outside, I mean, it's amazing how people drive, you know. I noticed in El Paso, boy, what a passion, false ego. People will stick up their middle fingers at you. You don't have to be doing anything if they just think you're not going fast enough. Even if you're doing the speed limit. You see? Oh, they zoom around you, they do all, you know. There's something about El Paso. There are different places, but El Paso is one of those places. Is it? People seem kind of nice here, though.
You know? They are. But there's a real mix, because you have the college kids, and they really have the false ego habit.
Yeah.
And they get in the way, you know. There are all older people are real nice, but they drive the speed limit or they drive a little slow, which can inflame you sometimes because they're blocking, you know, two lanes. You want to go round and they're driving slow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I got pulled over for that one time. There were two cars driving down Grant at 20 miles an hour. They were talking to each other, blocking the whole road. And it's a 40-mile-an-hour street. And I wanted to go, so I went into the center lane, which is the left turn lane. We have passing lanes here.
Mm-hmm.
And I gunned it, and I zip over in that lane. And as soon as I get there and I'm passing, you get it from the police officers. He turns around, and he follows me about a mile and pulls me over. And, I told him, I said, well, I was going to take a left. You know, but the left I took was like a quarter mile up the road. He says, that's not going to fly with me. Give me your license and registration. And he goes back and he runs and he comes back. And I just looked and I said, you know, you're right and I was wrong. That was wrong of me to do that. And he said, here you go. Have a nice night. We'll see you.
See, what you did is the perfect way to deal with someone correcting you.
Yeah.
The typical way that people... even some devotees, we have this tendency, because it's every man for himself, we have to defend what we have. We're looking out for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, so I have to defend. I have to defend my image, you see? So I have to defend it every minute. So there's a tactic that people have a tendency to do, all of us, unless we go in and fix it and override it. And it's what I refer to as the three Ds. Deny it. Someone says, tries to call you, you deny it. No, I don't. You know? Well, you know, when you're chanting, you know, you're kind of saying, schnick, 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 schnick. No, I don't. So the first thing is to deny it. The next thing is to defend it. Well, I have to really hurry. I've got so much service. I've got to hurry my rounds. So deny and then defend. something dishonest about that. Okay? And then, you either get one or all three of these. Deny it, defend it, and deflect it. Well, if you didn't give me so much to do, you know, you're always on top of me. Every day you're pushing me to get more and more service. So the spotlight comes on me that I've done well. I got it. I just can't stay in the spotlight. You know, it's his fault. You know, defend, defend, deflect. You know, one of the biggest deflections is a lot of times you'll hear it. It's like a knee-jerk reaction. So you'll be telling someone, you know, Prabhu, you know, maybe it would be better if you did it. Oh yeah, well, who are you? Who are you? Who are you to tell me? You see? But what have I just done? I deflected it. The light came on. You know, you're telling me that I could improve in this way. All right. I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about, okay, who are you? Now the expert person would say, oh, my name is Jivananda. And we'll get to that, more on that later. Back to what we were talking about. You know, we'll talk about me later because I got a lot of faults that we can talk a long time about. You see what I mean? You know, and we need to lighten up. Lighten up. It's not a big deal. So I have a fault. Shock. You know? But not anymore. Because of your kind and your love, your kindness and your love for me, you took it away. You corrected me. You raised me up. You know? I can remember when I was a temple president in Dallas, I used to get chastised a great deal by Tamal Krishna Goswami. And maybe some of you here don't know, but I know you know, that he was heavy. There used to be people used to say, Goswami is the heaviest, Goswami is the heaviest, Goswami is the heaviest, because he was heavy. He was like a general. Prabhupada was heavy with him. You know, push on this movement, go, do, distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. In a loving way. He was heavy in a loving way. A lot of people couldn't see that in him. Because it was, you know, the false ego would start to burn when he would, you know, when you'd goof up, you know, out of nonsense. You see. But I look back and I think, boy, those were some of the best days of my life. I got an education that I couldn't have bought. I couldn't have gone to school and bought an education like this. You know, Prabhupada hammered him on certain things when he made certain mistakes, and he would turn around and hammer me when I did the same mistakes using the same tactics that Prabhupada used. You know, and it was expected. You realize that's nonsense. Stop it. Go on. Keep moving. Keep serving. Keep it going. We all had lots to do. You know, get over yourself. You know, we didn't have time to say, well, you know, I don't like the way you said that. So, come on, you know. It never happened. Never, ever happened. I never, ever once said, you know, that's, I don't think that was a proper way to... Yes, yes, Maharaj.
You know. Sometimes you can feel that, but when you feel inside, like, get the offense... You get offended, you know, and the idea is not to let it out because it's really the false ego.
Yeah.
You're living in fears that I'm not good enough, or I'm going to lose something, you know, or I'm not going to get something, you know, that I need your
yeah.
work, you know.
Yeah.
Strive on that.
It's a knee-jerk reaction. It's a reflex that we need to overcome. We need to overcome it. Make it go away. Get it... put a bridle on it and harness it. You see. Or else it'll ruin us. It'll ruin you in business. You know? In anything that you're really trying to do, it's a ruination. If we're going to be successful and reach our full potential, we have to work on that. regardless of what we're going to do, you see. So, and, you know, to help that along, it's really good. Now, you know, the modern day material world is upside down and backwards from the spiritual world. So a lot of things that they say, the psychologists and things like that, are just completely wrong. You know, they may make you feel warm and fuzzy for a moment. But, you know, self-image, self-image. You know, if we admit that we're fallen, I've had people say, well, it doesn't do much for your self-image. You know, well, you know, yes, it does, because I'm trying to get unfallen. And by realizing that I'm fallen, and by isolating how I'm fallen, now I can tackle those things one by one and become unfallen. Now, that really helps my self-image a great deal, you see. So, and another thing, the devotee shouldn't accept an offense. You know? I don't want to accept it. You might be making a mistake out of some, maybe you've got too much pressure on you. Right? Maybe so many things are going wrong, and then you do something. Now, and you were wrong and you're dealing with me. You see? But it could have been that you're stressed. It could have been a lot of things. If I get offended, you've just offended a devotee. You see? But I don't want you to suffer the offense of a devotee. So I'm not going to get offended. Because I'm all right. I'm okay. I've been saved. Prabhupada has picked us all up. We're here. We're in the associate. Everything is okay. You don't have to defend here. You know, you can check your weapons at the door. This is a safe area, you see. So, you think, I'm not going to take any offense. I refuse to. Now, somebody else other devotees might be offended at the way someone is dealing with you, or Krishna might be offended at the way someone is dealing with you, but at least you don't do it, you see. And learn to be a little tougher on yourself. You see, you may not be able to go into a devotee and say, you know, you fool, you shouldn't do this. How many times do I have to tell you again and again and again, and you keep on, you know, what kind of an idiot are you? You can't do that with people, you know. So you may, it's not a, but you know what? You can be tough with yourself and get away with it. You see, you can tell yourself, you idiot. Fool, how many times are you going to do that? You know? You've got better sense than that. You know better. Don't cut yourself a whole lot of slack. You see? You can do that. As a matter of fact, maybe if you have some emotion that you just have to get off on other people, you can turn it on yourself. You see? If you have to. Internally. I mean, don't be overly brutal, but sometimes if you need to be tough to yourself. You see? So, but I wanted to talk about false ego. I try to do that in different places where I go. Because there's some things we don't talk enough about. You know, how to interface with one another in a loving way. And false ego will prevent us from developing our love for one another. Because of all the chastisement that I got from so many of my sannyasi godbrothers, don't think for a minute that I felt unloved. Boy, I'm telling you, I could feel it, you know. I can remember TKG when I was temple president in Dallas, and I think it was 1980, and there was a lot going on and some people were making mistakes, and since I was in charge, it was my fault. Even though I didn't do it and I didn't even know what they were doing. They were, you know, but the buck stopped with me. You know, he blew me away. I mean, he was really ferocious. And then he said, all right, go on now. Finish up your day. So I left and I started walking down the hall, and he had this buzzer. You know, he would press this button, and when he wanted somebody to come in, he would you hear this buzzer. And it got to the point when you'd hear that buzzer, you'd go, oh, what did I do now? So I started walking down the hall, going back to my office, and I heard, like, oh no. He wants to chastise me some more. You know, so I went and I said, yes, Maharaj. And he had this big, beautiful smile. And he said, boy, that was a real heavy talk we had, wasn't it? And I looked at him, I'm thinking, we weren't having a talk. You were having a talk. You know? I was trying to hold on and keep the breeze from blowing me out of the room. And he smiled and he said, you know, I love you. And we got a big job. We got a big job here. We were getting that Dallas Temple up and going. You know, it didn't look anything like it does now. It was an old, horrible building. So we had big plans and a lot to do. We had to do a lot in a short period of time with limited resources. And, you know, so it was, we had to focus. We had to get serious. And we all wanted the same thing. We all wanted to do the best for Srila Prabhupada. So, it wasn't like, I just didn't like the way you dealt with me. You know, we didn't have time. Did you see much of that in the old days? I mean, I don't think I remember any. You know, when I was temple president, sometimes we had some nonsense people and I had to be really heavy with them. And many times, the people that I was the heaviest with, we turned out to be very close friends. They would later say, you know, you cared for me. You know, you did. Instead of going behind my back and saying, no, I was off, you got me on track because I knew you cared. You know. And they're still friends, tight friends to this day. Tighter than, you know, not just loose, real tight friends. You know, we're welded together. You see. So in this discussion on how we can serve Krishna better and advance better, we will become closer with one another, you see. And our love for one another will grow. So, any more questions? I think it's kind of late so far. Yes, Mother?
Well, I was just going to say, I have my false ego. I have a problem with, like, you know, being devotees who are kind of like the me, and I consider my senior devotee. But I just have a problem with, like, when new devotees come and they just, you know, they don't have proper training. And
they think they know it all.
They think they know it all. They feel like they can bully everybody else around, and my false ego gets in the way. I have a problem with that. It's more like I feel like I don't want to feed that energy because, you know, it could be a problem for them also.
Yeah.
It makes them worse. That's my experience. I've seen it. It makes them worse.
Yeah. The way to deal with that is just always, always be firm in your faith in what you know is right. And you know it's right because you got it from Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, you see. So, and kind and loving on for them because they're affected by some false ego. They're not on the path yet, but they think they are. So we have to gently get them on the path, you know, somehow or other. You know, it's like in India, you see people and they've got goats or maybe cows, water buffaloes, and they're trying to get them to go down the street. And they've got a stick, and they may, if they start to wander over, they kind of tap them a little bit with that stick to get them back on the path. Then they start to go, they'll tap them just, you know, not hit, but just tap a little. You know, so sometimes we have to do that. It's very difficult, you see. It's kind of like, you have, it's kind of like, you have to see it as if you're dealing with a child. You see? So they're younger and they're inexperienced. But sometimes a child thinks that they know it all. And you have to kindly and gently, you know, with love, kind of help them see through that. You know, it's a real test. That particular situation you're talking about can be very difficult, especially if those people are real pushy. You know? And if they keep saying things like, well, it should be this, it should be this, you say, you know, Prabhu, where did you hear that? You know? We're supposed to, I always heard that we should quote where we heard that. You know, Guru, Shadu, they said it, says it in Shastra. You know, could you tell me where that, you know, not in a challenging way, very innocent, you know, humble. Could you tell me where you got that information? You know, I just want to know. So that when I tell folks, I'll know where it came from. You know, they may go, well, I read it in the Upanishad. Or it was in the Canto. You know, chapter on the letter. You know, mostly they'll say, well, I don't know, but Bhakta Bob over at the Denver Temple, Bhakta Bob was telling me about that. Oh, okay. Did you have a question, Mom?
What is the comment? There's a story that Prabhupada tells that a boy was raised by his aunt because his parents were gone or died or something, and so she overindulged him, tried to compensate for the loss of his parents, but meanwhile he was getting in trouble, getting in worse trouble, and she never corrected him or chastised him, so then he finally committed murder or something, so he's on the trial to die, actually. So he said, well, I have one last request. Could my aunt come up here? I have something to tell her. So the aunt's thinking, oh, he's just going to tell me how grateful and thankful he is at everything I've done for him. So she goes over to lean over and he bites her nose. And that form. And he said, all this time you didn't correct me. I was making mistakes and you just let it go. And you know, that wasn't real love. What you should have done is told me, you know, now look, I'm going to die now because of your kindness.
Yeah.
Your kindness.
So. Because of your false kindness.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I don't want to tell you something that you're doing wrong because I want you to like me. I'm afraid you may not like me if I tell you, you know, so therefore, maybe I should just agree with you, you know. Society's built like that, you know. People associate with people who will tolerate or whose neuroses match up. You see, I can be a little crazy around you because you're kind of crazy too, you know. You sit around and complain about the government together, you know, or, you know, sometimes men get together and complain about their wives. Wives get together and complain about their husband, you know, whatever. You're people who are just, you know, and it takes a bold, loving, caring person, bold, you know, to say, stop that. You're wrong. Come on, cut it out. I expect more than that from you. You know? Oh, you're a better person than that. Come on. Get over yourself. You know? Yeah. Yeah, throw in a little humor kind of helps. But, you know, sometimes when you do that, people, you know, they react. You hit a nerve and their false ego gets really, real heavy. So we have to do it with love, but that's a really good example of how condoning, you know, I mean, now the kid's on death row. And the aunt wanted his love and affection, so she condoned everything he did. And what did she end up with? Now he hates her. He blames her. You know? So, and ultimately people will think, you know, well, if you were really my friend, for all these years, you would have told me this mistake that I've been making. You know, they may not say that to you, but they'll think like that. And yes?
And he heard that Bhakti Siddhanta said, if you flatter me, you're my enemy. Mm-hmm. And if you, you know, chastise me, you're my real friend.
Right.
If you criticize me, you're you.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that? Flatter? Did he use...
what did he say?
Oh. Yeah, I can't remember right now, but yeah, something that...
Praise me.
Praise, right. If you praise me, you're my enemy. He who praises me is my enemy. He who finds fault is my friend. You know, something like that. You know, I can't remember. I haven't heard that in a long time, but it's so true, you know. Because we like to hear this, like music to our ears. When we're in Maya, people are praising, we say, huh? What was that you said? Oh, shucks, no. Oh, that's just not so, that's not true. Say more, though. See? All right. Shiva Bhagavatam.